Hello and welcome to my very first podcast. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Ed Edens. And this is where we talk all things Chicago sports and then some. Today we got a very special guest, diehard Cubs fan, big baseball fan, and we're going to get ready to talk some preseason baseball, look forward to the upcoming season, and give some predictions. Good friend of mine, Chaz Treface. Chuck, thanks for being on the show.
Eddie, it's really good to be here. I'm excited to get on the show, talk some baseball, finally get over my Bears hangover. I've had a couple good things from the Chicagoland sports area recently. The Blackhawks off to a good start. Bears new coach, Mark Trestman, pretty excited about that. On the Bulls, hopefully we'll see D. Rose back on the court soon. So we're moving forward with some good momentum here.
You know, I'm hoping you're right, Chaz, because it has been a long couple months, it seems like, since the Bears were even a little decent. But Hawks are 2-0. Hossa looks good. He's back healthy. God, I really need some positive vibes. But
yeah, I was thinking, as Cubs fans, it's probably not good to get too overly optimistic. it always just seems to set us up for a big letdown.
I tried really hard to be as pessimistic as I could last year, so any good thing that happened would put me in a better mood. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes after we talk about some baseball right now. So why don't we start out? We'll go division by division. Thinking, recap some moves. Talk about where each team's at, where you see them finishing up this year. So why don't we start over in the NL East? What do you have over there, Chuck?
The NL East, that was one of the fun ones last year. I think you and I were both pretty high in the Nationals.
That's correct.
Made us look pretty good. I think as we go through these, we're only going to talk about our predictions from last year for the ones that went well, and ignore the ones we completely missed on. So don't think that we got all of them right last year, but those are the only ones we're going to talk about. Just wanted to get that out of the way early. But as far as this division goes, I mean, I really just see two teams here, and that's the Braves and the Nationals. I mean, if by some miracle Philadelphia stays healthy, they might have a shot. But I think even a healthy Philadelphia team at this point, I don't think overtakes the Braves or the Nationals. So at this point, it's a two-horse race for me. Really like the moves the Nationals made, bringing Dan Heron. Although losing Michael Morris, the one big question for me with Washington is their offense. And that pitching staff, to me, got better, replacing
Edwin Jackson.
Yeah. Thank you. I was drawing a blank there with Dan Heron. That's definitely an upgrade. As far as the offensive goes, I mean, you're going to need another big season out of Adam LaRoche. Jason Worth's going to have to produce. I mean, to me, the Braves' offense is better. And the question mark comes in with the Braves is their pitching staff. You're going to get another good year out of Chris Medlin. So to me, it's kind of weighing those two things. I think the addition of Rafael Soriano for the Nationals really bolsters that rotation. So I have these two teams neck and neck. And to me, it's tough to really pick a winner here, because I think whoever doesn't win the division will definitely make the wild card.
Well,
what are you thinking of this division?
You know, you say a healthy Phillies team doesn't have a shot to overcome the Braves and the Nats, but if you think about it, you know, they still have their rotation in order. You know, if Halliday comes back healthy, Lee's still there, Hamels, that's still one of the best rotations in baseball. Apparently, Chase Utley has been working out the entire offseason. His knees feel great. Ryan Howard's coming back. I don't see any reason why they can't compete in that division, especially, you know, with how important pitching's been lately in the game. But
so that means you're chalking all of last year's struggles for Roy Halladay up to injury and not being completely healthy?
I think it was the first time he struggled with kind of breaking down a little bit. It's kind of a well-known fact within the baseball world that he's one of the hardest workers. But I think, you know, he is getting a little older, but the work ethic is still there. He has an off season to kind of recuperate and get ready for 2013. I don't see any reason why you can't expect, you know, at least 90% of the old Roy Halladay, which is still, you know, better than a lot of the pitchers you got out there in the game.
That's fair. And looking at their lineup, I may have misspoke saying a completely healthy Philly team wouldn't compete. I think looking at this team running down the line up here, a completely healthy team would. But there's just so many question marks that, to me, there's no way that everyone stays healthy enough to make a 162-game run at it.
It's a good way to say it. A lot of question marks, because that's what they all amount to. And if they were to make a playoff run, you'd need them all to be healthy for at least the vast majority of the season. So I guess that's not as likely as, say, a Braves or Nationals team staying healthy. But, I mean, looking at the rest of the division, the Mets are just still in their rebuilding mode. They obviously made a huge move trading R.A. Dickey, coming off of a Cy Young season. I've gone back and forth myself, debating whether or not that was a rational thing to do for Mets management. What's your take on that deal?
They got back
Travis d'Arnaud. He was the big piece.
Right. The catcher. Did they get back another arm, too, from Toronto?
I want to say they did, but I know that the big piece that they were really excited about was d'Arnaud, and I hope I'm saying that right, but I know that Mets management was saying they did not want to trade Dickey unless they got back an impact player. So obviously they believe that he is said impact player, and he could be a piece for the Mets moving forward. I'm looking it up right now. Looks like the Blue Jays got Dickey, catcher Josh Thole, and catcher Mike Nickias, and they sent Travis d'Arnaud, John Buck. Oh, they got Noah Syndergaard.
Right, he was the big name I was thinking of in that.
That's right. He's a higher ceiling arm also.
Right, I was looking, I think it was on MLB.com today, but I think they had him one of the top 10 right-handers, right-handed prospects in the game right now. So I know he had a really good year last year wherever he was playing in the minors. So that's a good prospect for them to add to their pipeline. Matt Harvey came on the scene last year, was big for them. I think you're right, though. I think some pieces are here. I think Ike Davis, if he gets a full year being healthy, I mean, his second half last year, I know his average wasn't there, but the home runs were. They signed David Wright. Didn't they extend him this offseason?
They did extend him. So he's pretty much locked in for the majority of his career. The other piece they have waiting is Zach Wheeler, another one of their highly touted pitching prospects. Basically, they have some promise going forward, but, I mean, do you think 2013 is their year? Maybe if everything goes exactly the right way?
I think there's too much in that division with Atlanta and Washington, and best case scenario for them, I mean, Matt Harvey, you can't count on him having the year, the quarter or third of the year like he did last year for the whole season this year. I think Johan's coming off injury. Too many question marks here. And I think, going into the 2014 season, they're, one big free agent move away from, if d'Arnaud, pans out, comes out maybe the second half of this year, I think they're still a year or two away, but I do like what they're doing. I don't mind the Dickey trade, because if you can get a guy like d'Arnaud behind the plate and kind of be a staple there, you see a lot of teams. San Francisco comes to mind right away, having Posey as a staple back there. So to me, if you can lock up that position for years to come, that's a good move for them. But again, like I said, a couple years away for the Mets, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I just keep going back to the fact that Dickey's coming off the Cy Young year. He's shown he's not a one-hit wonder. You can make the argument that over the last 2.5 seasons, he's actually gotten better as time has gone along. Has he reached his ceiling? Are we going to even see more improvement from him? I mean, he is old. He is a knuckleballer. He's not a traditional pitcher, but that might make him something that could possibly be, successful for years to come. I'm just wondering if maybe the Mets are playing for 5-6 years down the road if they're not planning on having him around.
Well, I think the Mets' thinking was there's risk with Dickey in that it might not be a one-year wonder, but they're trading him when his value is the highest. I mean, getting one very top-tier prospect in d'Arnaud and another top prospect in Syndergaard. You're not going to get more for Dickey. I just don't see his value going up. So from the Mets standpoint, it was selling high here. With the Blue Jays, I like that trade for them too. I mean, they have Aaron Seabee behind the plate there, who's going to provide enough offense to play that position. And then they're making a run at it now, so I don't mind the move from either perspective, and I think that's what the thinking was.
Yeah, I agree. I think ultimately it will be a move that benefits both teams. Well, obviously, we'll get to the Blue Jays when we get to the AL East, but you know, they are competing for right now, and the Mets are probably looking at 2015 more realistically. But moving over to the Braves, you know, you mentioned you think their offense is in a better position than the Nationals. I don't know if I completely agree with that. I like where the Nationals' offense is right now. And, you know, the Braves...
Well, I'm guessing this comes down to one player, and his name begins with B and ends with Ice Harper.
Yeah, you're right. I'm a big Bryce Harper fan. He's definitely one of my top two or three favorite players in the game, so... You know, full disclosure, I am probably biased, but, you know, you can't deny that he was a spark plug for that offense last year. Anytime you bring in a young guy with energy like that, who will take the extra base, who will run out every ground ball hard, you know, it kind of motivates the rest of the squad. And, you know, he wasn't the only piece in that lineup. Obviously, they had LaRoche had a great year, you know, Zimmerman was able to do things with the bat, even though his shoulder was kind of hurting, and Worth definitely had not a complete bounce back year, but he showed flashes of his former self. But you know, I think they have some of the pieces there, and I don't see why you think the Braves are significantly better.
Well, I think the one thing you'd point to is consistently, because if you're going to rely on Bryce Harper for a full season, which they will, and I know he's going to make strides this year to get better with his consistency, but there were times he really struggled for long stretches last year, and they're going to keep running him out there every day. So that's a, when you have him struggling and a couple other guys struggling, I just think there's going to be times during the year where they're going to struggle to score runs. And with that being said, the rotation is good enough. I mean, I think it's better than last year. There's no innings limit on Strasburg, but still, I go through this Braves lineup and I look at guys like Freddie Freeman, Jason Hayward, guys like that who, to me, are only going to be better this year than they were last year. You know, both Hayward and Freeman, I think, could both have breakout years. I know Hayward, I mean, Hayward had a really good year last year, but just with all, his ceiling is still higher. So is Freeman's. Ugla's going to drive in runs there. You know, I like the addition of B.J. Upton. Hopefully he could be a change of scenery guy where he, you know, finally tunes in and hits, you know, reaches his 25, you know, he's a guy who could get up to 30 home runs. So to me, the question with the Braves is the rotation.
That's a good point. You're absolutely right. Freeman and Hayward are going to be there for a long time, and they're just starting to reach their potential. You know, looking at the Braves pitching, though, their bullpen is definitely in fantastic shape. So that's another thing that puts them up there. But, you know, their rotation is, I don't want to say questionable, but it's not one of their areas of strength that it definitely was, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, especially compared to the Nationals.
Right. I mean, you're going to have to count on a guy like Chris Medlin to duplicate the year he had last year. He kind of came out of nowhere to have, I mean, one of the better years in baseball, especially in the second half. Tim Hudson, you know, who knows when he's going to hit that wall at the end of his career. Mike Minor has been up and down. I mean, and then you're waiting on Brandon Beachy to come back. You don't know how much you're going to get out of him this year. So to me, I mean, this could be a team that goes after an arm at trade deadline who adds that one piece. Maybe they kind of are back and forth at top with the Nationals throughout the year and then add an arm at the trade deadline. But like you said, that bullpen, I mean, these guys can turn games into six-inning affairs where if they have a lead after six innings, you know, they go Venters and now Walden.
Right.
I like that acquisition for them because that when you can add Walden to a bullpen that already has Venters and Kimbrel, that makes him even that much more valuable because now he takes the seventh, Venters eighth, Kimbrel ninth, and you've turned the game into a six-inning game if you can get a lead.
I don't know if I'd put Walden in that elite category that I think Venters and Kimbrel are in, but that was the one thing I wanted to bring up. What do you think about sending Tommy Hansen out to the AL West and getting Walden in return? I mean, 2 or 3 years ago, Hansen was, you know, the next Greg Maddux, you know, coming in there and being a stalwart in their rotation. I know he had injury issues, but do you think they gave up on him too soon, especially when you're talking about you are waiting for Beachy? There's questions about the readiness of Julio Teheran and Randall Delgado. They trade away Arodis Vizcaino to the Cubs. They don't have a lot of proven guys. Chris Medlin hasn't been in the rotation for more than half a season. Hudson's getting older, like you said. I just think it goes back to the thing we were talking about earlier. It comes down to question marks, and they don't have a lot of proven arms there. They've got a lot of potential, but why would you give away Hansen in that situation?
Well, and the only thing I can point to here is that they've seen Hansen come up through the system. They've seen Hansen pitching the bigs for a couple years. I mean, internally, they have a better idea of what Hansen is capable of than anybody else. And so, I mean, if you trust in that management team, in that front office, the thinking has to be they don't think Tommy Hansen is anything more than a mid to back end starter. And with all the, you know, the talent they have in the minors between Teheran, Randall Delgado, and a couple other arms, they said, you know what, we can add a power arm to the back end of the bullpen, position ourselves where we're not going to have to go out at the trade deadline and get bullpen help. We'll be able to zone in on, you know, one of the top couple starters out there in the market. And if that's where we need to make our move, we can do that, because I think there's less risk in having Jordan Walden in your bullpen than running Tommy Hansen out there and counting on him to be a 2-3 starter after the way he performed last year.
That's true. That's a good point. They are kind of focusing their need in one place, and that's only a need they will have if some of those guys don't pan out. And like we've been saying, their pitching prospects are top tier, and they could have a very high ceiling. So maybe it was the right time to trade Hansen, especially, you know, they know better than anyone what his situation is.
I mean, the one thing we haven't talked about here with the Braves is the third base situation, because they have a big hole to fill there with Chipper being out. Juan Francisco's penciled in there now. I'm going to be honest with you, I've never heard of him before. So,
yeah, I see that they have Martin Prado as a backup, but I don't know. Maybe they slide Uglow over there. They don't really have an answer at second base either, but you know, now that I'm looking at it, their squad is pretty young. I mean, they've got McCann as a veteran, but even he's a question mark coming off of a shoulder surgery. Uglow has never been a very consistent hitter except for that insane hitting streak that he had in the middle of a Mendoza line season. But I guess you could put their offense as a higher ceiling if Upton reaches his potential, if McCann comes back healthy, if Aldrayton Simmons works out as a prospect at shortstop. But I don't know. I'm not sold that this offense is necessarily much better than the Nationals, and I think it'll be a lot closer than you think.
Offensively, I mean, because I put these two teams neck and neck, and to be honest, I'm giving the advantage to Washington right now just because of their pitching, getting a full year of Strasburg, adding Dan Heron to that rotation, getting another year out of Zimmerman.
Gio.
And I didn't even mention him, who he was a Cy Young candidate last year.
Right. I think it is huge getting that full season out of Strasburg. Even though they did get 160 very strong innings out of him last year, I think the fact that they were talking about shutting him down really put a cloud over that team. You know, it's kind of like you say, or some players refuse to talk about contract extensions during the season because they don't want it to be a distraction. You know, Pujols famously said, "I'm not talking about it once the season starts." I think just the fact that that team saw their leader, one of their aces, and they saw him, you know, that he was going to get shut down, that kind of distracted them more than anything. Now they know they're going out there full steam. They've got, like you said, Gio behind him, Zimmerman, Detweiler, Heron. It's very strong. But I think their ceiling offensively is just as high, if not higher, than the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, depending upon how you think Bryce Harper's sophomore year ceiling is. And I agree with you completely on the Strasburg point that I think this year it's full steam ahead. There's nothing to hold them back because there were a couple of players who spoke out last year basically saying you have a chance to make it to the playoffs. You don't hold anything back because especially some of the veteran guys know that, you know, I mean, there's some guys who bounce around 7, 8, 9 years in the bigs and don't make it to the playoffs.
Right.
And so when you're in a position, because things can change in a heartbeat in baseball. One guy goes down with an injury and things just snowball from there. So I think there was a feeling that when you have that chance, you go for it. And so some of the veterans on that team last year, a little disappointed in that decision. This year, none of that. I think you're right. I think they're full steam ahead, and I think the Nationals take this division.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like the Denard Span acquisition as well. It shores up center field. It allows Harper to play a corner outfield going forward. They still have Anthony Rendon coming up in the system. He'll be in the infield somewhere. They've got a pretty high ceiling, and I had them winning this division as well, with the Braves at a close second. Phillies in third, but like I said, depending on all those question marks, they could move up. Mets, you know, maybe they get Johan Santana back 100%, but I don't know if I just don't see anything there of any great significance. And the one team we have not touched on, which we're laughing about for the second year in a row now, the Miami Marlins. God, what is there to say about the Marlins?
This lineup is, I mean, I haven't even heard of most of these guys in the lineup. And then you got Juan Pierre penciled in as their starting left fielder.
Ooh.
It's just, it's tough to be a Marlins fan right now. I mean, offensively, pitching-wise, they brought over Henderson Alvarez. He's a guy I've always liked. I think he'll do well in the National League. He's a young sinker baller, but don't want to spend too much time on them.
Yeah, this lineup is truly, I mean, I don't want to straight up insult the Marlins, but it's embarrassing. You know, mm-hmm. When you're talking about Juan Pierre being a starting left fielder for you, how old is he? He's got to be getting up there.
You know, I'd guess 38.
I was going to say 37. But, like, Ruggiano, Solano, Hecuvaria, Brantley, like, these are names that are going to be playing potentially 140 games in South Florida next year. Obviously, Giancarlo Stanton is still in right field there and is one of the best sluggers in the game already. Probably the premier slugger, one of the best young players in the game. I don't know.
I mean, he hit 37 home runs in 117 games last year.
That is just, those are similar to the power numbers we saw during the steroids era.
Yeah, I mean, he's an unbelievable talent, and if you're going to keep one guy on that team when you blew it up like that, he was probably the guy to keep. But
right, I mean, what was that? They sent Burley, Reyes, and who else was in that deal?
Was Hanley? Didn't they ship Hanley to the Dodgers?
That was a separate deal. Yeah, that was during the year. Hanley went over to LA, and that was an absolute steal for the Dodgers. I don't even know if the Marlins got one top-tier prospect in return for him.
Nate Eovaldi was the best guy in that deal.
And he is now penciled in as the number four starter for the Marlins. I don't know. I think, you know, they got Henderson Alvarez back for the big deal with Toronto. You got Jacob Turner last year in the Anibal Sanchez deal to Detroit, but I feel like they're just consistently getting 80 cents on the dollar for all these deals, and that might be generous. I don't know if they have a real rebuilding plan. I don't know what the ownership is really thinking. And if he is thinking we're going to bring in some big free agents down the line, who's going to want to sign with them after seeing Reyes sign that deal and then get shipped out, after seeing Burley sign that deal and get shipped out? Josh Johnson was the other piece in that deal up to Toronto.
Mm,
you know,
yeah.
He's been down in with the Marlins for many years now, and they kind of sent him out of town unceremoniously. Same with Hanley Ramirez. You know, I don't envision anybody really wanting to sign with that team unless Loria really offers them the house. It's kind of a depressing situation.
Yeah, and it's tough with that new ballpark they just built there, but we'll see what happens with them.
That even makes it worse. And you had Ozzie last year. Oh, my God.
What a debacle. I mean, it's just embarrassing is the word that...
If I had to choose one word, it would be fiasco. Just an ultimate, you know, screw-up of the grandest kind. And that, like we said last year when we were talking about the Mets... it really says something when two Cubs fans are calling another organization a screw up. But, I don't see them finishing anywhere other than last place in that division, probably winning less than 65 games. It could be as bad as the Astros were last year.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, that wraps up the NL East. You see the Braves overcoming the Nats, or you got them up the Nats?
No, I like the Nationals with their pitching. I just think they're so deep, and they proved last year that that's what you need to sustain over 162 game seasons, have that deep, healthy pitching staff.
Absolutely.
So I don't see any reason they can't do it again this year.
All right. Well, let's move over to the NL West. We'll save our favorite division for last in the National League. So when you go out west, I mean, obviously the Giants are kind of a semi-dynasty right now. They've been very competitive the last couple of years, a couple world championships. But now you have the Dodgers with their new ownership group, and they're ready to spend just hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, they brought in Crawford, Beckett, Adrian Gonzalez. They brought in the Korean pitcher Ryu. They signed Granke. They're talking about a Kershaw extension long term now. It's just really, it's incredible the money that they're willing to spend now that they've got the new ownership group. So, I don't know, you know, do you see, besides the Dodgers or Giants, do you see like the Diamondbacks, Rockies, or Padres making noise, or is it just mainly the Giants and Dodgers?
I think it's mainly the Dodgers. I mean, Arizona is that team that you always want to pencil in just with that talent, but I think the whole Justin Upton situation is not a good one they have going there. You know, they had a deal in place with Seattle, and that was one of the few cities that Justin Upton had veto power to, and he vetoed that trade. And there's some talent in that rotation, but just too many times the Diamondbacks have proven that they can't put a complete team together that keeps it together for 162 games.
I mean, you do forget just 2 years ago they won the division, and I believe I think Kirk Gibson is still the manager out there, and you know he led them to that successful year when nobody really had any faith in them either. It could happen again, but I agree with you. I think the Giants and the Dodgers are definitely in a better position to take a serious run at the playoffs. One thing I want to point out, if you look at this Dodgers lineup, doesn't it remind you of those Yankees teams from 3 and 4 years ago where they would just spend as much money as they could to get the big names? Like, you've got Carl Crawford, one of the biggest free agent names from, well, I want to say 3 years ago, Matt Kemp, MVP candidate, Andre Ethier, who was also an MVP candidate 2 and 3 years ago, Adrian Gonzalez, Hanley Ramirez, Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke, even, you know, Chad Billingsley, Josh Beckett has been up there before. Their rotation is 8 deep right now. When you add in the Korean Ryu, Billingsley, Capuano, Harang, Lilly, it's a very deep team. And even their bullpen is in pretty good shape with Brandon League and Kenley Jansen. It's honestly a star-studded team. Do you think that backfires in kind of the way we've seen these super teams emerging in different sports lately? Do you think they can put it together and make a run next year now that they have a full season of all these guys?
I just think on this team there's so much talent that even if, because I look at guys like Adrian Gonzalez, who's, you know, his production has decreased the past couple years. Look at a guy like Hanley Ramirez, who has the potential to put it all together, but I don't think there's any way you can count on him to really live up to his potential, because he's shown he hasn't really been able to do that, and who knows what kind of situation, you know, he can really, if he can ever really put it together. With that said, even if those two guys have, you know, average years for them, you still got Matt Kemp out there. You still got Ethier. You know, anything you get out of Crawford, I mean, at this point, has to be a plus if he can put together a season that even resembles what he was doing in his prime. Then that's all on top of a rotation that you said is eight deep. I mean, their number seven guy right now, Chris Capuano, had one of the, you know, was one of the top 20 probably best pitchers in baseball last year from a numbers perspective. So they're just so deep. I mean, you don't. So compare this rotation last year. Last year we talked about the Red Sox, how they were counting on, you know, three guys at the top of the rotation between Lester, Buchholz, and Beckett.
Exactly.
I mean, this season they don't even have to count Josh Beckett. They don't have to count on anyone, really, because they can have a couple guys go down.
That's true.
And still have a solid rotation. Granted, you don't. You're a completely different team without Kershaw and Greinke at the top of that rotation. But to me, bottom line here is way too much talent to not have a good to great season.
I agree. You know, one parallel that I've seen people pointing out is a couple months ago, another team in LA was assembled in a way they hadn't seen in a while. And now that the season's going on, it's been less than fantastic in the Los Angeles Lakers. They bring in Steve Nash and they bring in Dwight Howard, and everybody says, well, let's just pencil them in against the Heat in the finals and call it a season. Meanwhile, they're under 500. They're about to lose to the Bulls tonight, hopefully. I don't know. I think baseball is not the same thing as basketball, but I think when you have a lot of egos out there and some of them are past their primes or maybe aren't going to perform the way they want to, things could unravel quickly. But I think, you know, if they put it all together, their ceiling is definitely higher than the Giants.
I think you have a valid concern that you look at guys like Greinke and Beckett, who, you know, there's always been questions about Greinke and his issues dealing with, you know, whatever social disorder and his kind of anxiety issues. Beckett's always been a kind of hot, cold guy where if he gets, you know, if he doesn't like the manager or management, he can be, you know, a little troublesome. At the same time, though, baseball, like you said, it's a different game. You don't need your players to match as well as you do in basketball, and I think that's one of the problems that's going on with the Lakers right now. So when you can run Kershaw, Greinke, Beckett, and then the back end of that rotation out there, you know, whether there's some shakiness going on in the clubhouse or not, those guys are just too talented to not win games for you. When you have guys like Matt Kemp anchoring down your lineup and Adrian Gonzalez playing a supporting role to Matt Kemp,
right?
I just think there's a lot of talent on this team, and I trust Don Mattingly to get enough out of this team to be at the top of that division.
I agree, but I think the Giants just absolutely can't be discounted. They don't have the star power that the Dodgers have, but they have a lot of pieces that fit very well together, and that are excited to be playing on that team in San Francisco. I mean, obviously, Buster Posey coming off one of the best seasons we've seen from a catcher in probably since Mike Piazza. You know, Pablo Sandoval, you know, just hitting his prime right now over in third base. Brandon Belt coming to his own. Scudero coming off a great playoffs. Now Hunter Pence back in the outfield. Angel Pagan. And obviously, just as talented of a rotation as the Dodgers, at least at the top, in Kane, Bumgarner, Lincecum, and then, you know, Vogelsong and Zito at the back end.
Right, I agree. And I think, you know, when looking at this National League as a whole, to me, you're going to have your three division winners and then your two wild card teams, right?
Yes.
So to me, that's, you know, Washington. So you're going to have five teams coming out of there. To me, it's Washington, Atlanta, whoever wins the Central, and then LA and San Francisco.
I agree that's probably the way we're going to see it break down. But remember last year, we basically said it's two of the Yankees, Red Sox, and Rays, and then definitely the Angels and Rangers. And that's what a lot of people around baseball said. All of a sudden, the Angels can't put it together, even though they have two of the best offensive players in the game, and they had a pretty good rotation on paper. There's no guaranteed things, is what I'm trying to say.
Right, right.
But it's hard to make an argument against a team that's led by guys like Kane, Bumgarner, and Lincecum. Speaking of, do you see Tim bouncing back? Yeah, he had a pretty awful season, all things considered, last year, and it was something that not a lot of people expected out of him.
Yeah, I mean, the one question for him is going to be, he's a, you know, a smaller guy. There's questions of his durability. You know, is this a question of durability? Him, you know, throwing a lot of innings his first couple years in the bigs, and maybe this finally catching up to him. Because his fastball wasn't where it was at last year in relation to his previous years when he was getting the ball consistently into the mid-90s. And for him, being able to change speeds from mid to high 90s and his changeup being one of his better pitches, that differential dropped last year, and I think that was a big issue for him. And the other question is whether he's going to be able to, you know, mentally evolve like pitchers have to as they progress throughout their careers. You look at a guy like Zito. Zito's been able to stick around, not because, you know, he's been able to maintain a fastball in the low 90s, but because he's been able to figure out how to get guys out. And so, to me, watching Lincecum this year, is it going to be, can he go through an offseason and figure out a new strategy or get back to his, you know, the old strategy that worked and execute it, but do something where he can consistently get guys out again? So he's one of the guys I'll really be watching this year. If I had to make a prediction, I think he comes back somewhere in between this past year. I don't think he's going to be near his Cy Young, when he was up there in the Cy Young talks a couple years ago.
No, I agree. I think you made a very valid point. His fastball's not where it used to be. You've seen his velocity drop consistently the last couple years. And I read in mid to late season last year that not only was he not locating his fastball and not pitching as effectively as he used to, but he was also getting unlucky. When you look at statistics like batting average on balls in play, left on base percentage, everything was kind of breaking against him. So that compounded his issue. I think he comes back. I think he's too good of a pitcher to just fail to make adjustments. I just think he won't be as talented or as successful as he once was.
Well, I mean, to be valuable to that rotation, he doesn't have to come back and be a Cy Young candidate. He has to come back and be a solid middle-of-the-rotation guy, which, I mean, he's shown clearly he has the potential to be.
Right. Well, I agree. Bumgarner and Kane will anchor the rotation, but what do you think when you compare the ceiling of their rotation when you compare the ceiling of, say, the Diamondbacks? You know, they trade Bauer away. There's obviously a disconnect there, but they still have Ian Kennedy, Dan Hudson, Wade Miley coming off a near Rookie of the Year campaign, Trevor Cahill, Brandon McCarthy, Tyler Skaggs, Archie Bradley. I think their ceiling is higher, and if everything breaks their way, they could be the team that nobody really expected to do anything at the beginning of the season, but comes out and makes a playoff run.
I think from a depth perspective, I think there's a lot of guys in that Diamondback rotation who could end up being solid number two guys. And so if you get, Kennedy's shown he's a, solid number two, if not, number one starter on a good team. Cahill, he's a little up and down early in his career, but if he can bring that ERA down a little bit, had a very good year last year, he's a good number two, three guy. Wade Miley, I think he'll regress a little bit this year. I mean, just from a stuff perspective, doesn't throw that hard from the left side. Brandon McCarthy, again, could be a, you know, kind of a number 2-3 guy. And then, you know, Skaggs and Daniel Hudson, if he comes. I just see a lot of number 2-3 guys in this rotation, where a rotation of five number 2-3s is very good and should make for a very solid regular season if that all goes their way. But in terms of ceiling, I'd rather take a rotation where you have guys like Kane, like Bumgarner, Vogelsong, and then Lincecum at the back with that potential to have. I'd rather have a rotation with the potential to have two number one guys than a rotation with, you know, three or four number two guys.
Really? I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, obviously it's great to have studs at the top of your rotation, but if we're talking a two or three, it's, I guess it depends on your definition of a number two or number three starter. But if you've got depth with them, it's very easy to make a play at, say, the trade deadline, where you get either a top number one guy, or you're able to trade away some of your pitching and get another piece you desperately need. It's also not unreasonable to expect one or two of those guys to make a leap and become that number one guy. You know, that could be, for all we know, Wade Miley this year. Maybe Trevor Cahill regains his form from a couple of years ago. Maybe, you know, Kennedy and Hudson come back strong because they looked, you know, absolutely phenomenal 2 years ago. It's just hard to forecast that, but I don't know. I'm not sleeping on the Diamondbacks. I have them finishing third in this division, but they could definitely be that team that that comes out of nowhere and surprises some people.
I see your point. I guess my thinking was that I can't see in Wade Miley in any scenario being a number one. You know, guys like Kennedy, he's sort of the low-end number one, high-end number two, probably same with Hudson. I see these kind of as being their ceiling there. Whereas, I don't know, guys like Kane and Bumgarner, those guys are clear, legit number one aces. And so that's my thinking there. And then if you get to a postseason series and can roll out, you know, two number ones, to me, I just think you always want to have the as many ace guys as you can.
Okay, I'll agree with that, but I will just make this one point. You have to make it to the playoffs first to reap the benefits of having two aces in, say, a five-game series. But I think you probably have about equal probabilities making it to the playoffs if you have a low number of high-end guys or a higher number of middle-tier guys.
Fair point.
Let's move on to Colorado and San Diego. Two teams that have some pieces there, but I just don't see either of them making a real charge this year. You got Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez in Colorado, but their pitching leaves a lot to be desired. And you got Chase Headley coming off of a career year in San Diego. Yonder Alonso's still there. But then Yasmani Grandal gets suspended 50 games for a positive performance-enhancing drugs test. Their pitching isn't very strong either. Do you see either of these teams with any promise?
I mean, the thing with Colorado is there was so much disappointment last year in the rotation. I mean, they had top prospects like Pomeranz, Christian Friedrich. They expected a lot out of Yolish Chachin, and just nothing went right for that rotation last year at all. And, you know, looking at it this year, it's tough to think that anything is going to really change unless one of those guys takes a major step. But to me, way too many question marks in that rotation. As far as San Diego goes, Headley proved he, you know, can be one of the top players in the league, but again, the rotation, they've got some guys in the minors they can bring up here, but that offense, there's actually a couple pieces to like there. If Quinn, not that he's proved he can, but he's been productive when healthy. I like San Diego a little more here just because I think they'll have more stability offensively and pitching-wise, but again, I don't see these teams competing this year.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, and I think San Diego could compete a few years down the road. They have one of the deepest systems in the game. they don't have a lot of impact guys from, you know, a perspective of, like in the R.A. Dickey trade, the Mets considered Darnaud an impact guy. The Padres don't have that super high ceiling prospect, but they have players that will contribute at a major league level and be productive for that team. They obviously traded away Anthony Rizzo to our Cubbies. Thank God for that move, because I just see Andrew Cashner being like a, you know, Mark Pryor 2.0. He is just an injury waiting to happen. And anytime you've got a young pitcher like that who's already spent significant time on the disabled list, it doesn't bode well for his future typically. They do have some other pitching prospects that could contribute. Casey Kelly, you know, their first-round draft pick from last year, Max Fried. But they're a couple years away at the very least.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think in your article on the state of the Cubs you wrote, I think that was a very good kind of comparison to Mark Pryor between Cashner. Definitely Cashner hasn't had the flash, the upside that, that Pryor had and would had. But, again, good trade for the Cubs there. I agree with everything you just said about San Diego, so I'm not going to repeat everything you said, but I think that was an accurate assessment.
So how do you see the division shaking out? Do you see the Dodgers taking it, or do you see the Giants? Because personally, me, I'm probably going to take the Giants, but I wouldn't mind, or I should say I wouldn't argue against anybody who had the Dodgers, and I probably wouldn't even argue against anybody who had the Diamondbacks. What order do you see for these five teams?
I like the Dodgers, to be honest. I think their pitching depth is there, and I think if anything, they'll get better as the year progresses playing together. And so I think, you know, they'll start off the year maybe be 3 or 4 or 5 games back of the Giants at the All-Star break, but I think they have a great second half. I think their pitching depth really carries them through the second half, and I see them overtaking San Francisco to win that division.
Well, it looks like we're going to have to split this into 3 parts. In part 2, we'll take a look at the National League Central and talk extensively about our beloved Chicago Cubs and talk about the state of the franchise and some other things going on in the division. Come back and join us for part 2 once again. This is In the Loop, and I'm your host, Ed Edens. Thanks for listening.